How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hey, Jen. What up?
Hey, Kim. What's going on with you?
Oh, you know, just keeping the energy up still.
Woohoo! Energy! Ha ha ha! See? Woo-hoo. I'm happy!
Happy! Happy!
I'm actually on the treadmill as we're recording.
You are? That's great.
Of course. I'm high energy.
I'm walking.
Are you ready for this?
Neighborhood.
How's that for energy?
That's perfect.
Oh, well.
Perfect.
I like how we just let things drop. We don't, like, run things into the earth.
If you don't know me...
No, I know. Oh, I know you.
And you. Like, this could go for whatever. It's okay, though. It could go for weeks, because we did that, see?
I know. You know. It could go for years.
It could. Speaking of years, you want to hear a story?
I do. That's why we're here.
That is right. And
let us have it.
Right,
sock
Jen,
it
Jen.
To me.
Here we go. Here
okay.
we go. Today, we are venturing out west to sunny California for a, missing persons case with what I can only say is it's a need to hear it to believe it. I'm not going to say it, but it is. You know what I'm going to say? You know.
Uh-huh.
It's a humdinger. Humdinger. We are going to go to Upland, California. Now, this is a suburb of Los Angeles. The majestic Mount Baldy, with its often snow-covered peak, is seen off in the distance, keeping an eye on, you know, the sprawling metropolis of Los Angeles and all its little suburbs, which there are so many, I can't even tell you. But that's where we go today. It is October 3rd, 1999, when Lieutenant Cliff Matthews reports to a nearby residence to take a report about a missing man. A young woman answers the door. She informs the officer that 71-year-old Jack Irwin has not checked in with anyone, and it had already been several weeks since she had last heard from him. 39-year-old Marcia Johnson explains to Matthews that she'd only known Jack about 7 months, but during that time, she would help Jack around the house, like cooking and cleaning, and she'd run errands with him or take him where he needs to go. You know, just do some stuff around the house for him since he was a little bit there in years.
That was nice.
The two had become quite close over the 7 months, almost, you know, kind of like a father-daughter. She tells Matthews that she last saw Jack when she had dropped him off at the Metrolink station at 5 p.m. on September 13th. So it's been a little bit over 2 weeks at this point. Marcia told the officer that Jack was going to take the Metrolink into L.A. from Upland, and then once he got in there, he was going to catch another train from L.A. to Seattle. Marcia added that this was kind of out of character for him, as he would never do anything like this so spontaneously. But recently, they had watched a show together, and it was about Seattle and the Space Needle, and Jack had been, you know, really interested in it, and he had talked about maybe wanting to go there. And so she kind of figured that he just decided to do it. She also mentioned that Jack never used credit cards, and he didn't take anything with him, hardly anything, right? Now, Jack, what you need to know about Jack is he led a pretty simple life, little Jack, in his 71 years. Jack was born in 1928 to an Oklahoma couple, and he was all boy, you know, Midwest boy. He liked fast cars, catching critters, going fishing, all that stuff that the little boys and growing up in the Midwest like to do, and we can confirm that because that's where we're from. Now, like many kids of that time, that era, as he grew up, Jack enlisted in the army, and he would go and fight in the Korean War. In the war, he drove a tank. During one of his deployments, he was in a tank. He was actually seeing some action during the war, and the tank was hit. Now, Jack made it out alive, but he was injured. He did attempt to go back in and rescue some of his fellow soldiers that were left behind, but sadly, he was unable to get them. And, you know, I'm sure that stayed with him for life. Now, this brave, selfless act that Jack did would earn him a Bronze Star, but it also earned him a lifelong injury to his head. The injury, which damaged his brain, affected his walk, his arms, and his voice for the rest of his life. He had trouble walking, he had tremors in his hands, and then he also had a speech impediment. The damage to the brain affected his vocal cords. He was pretty hard to understand, and I think that all goes to what we're going to get to next. When he returned to the States, Jack didn't keep in touch with his family that he once had. He became a very private person, and he didn't socialize. He didn't go out much. He would never marry, and he actually would never even get a job. He collected disability and social security, so he pretty private person, to say the least, right?
Right. Kept to himself.
Yes.
He was a loner dottie, a rebel.
Don't laugh, Jen. Getting emotional.
Sorry.
Now.
Veterans have all my love, I swear.
No,
they're amazing folk.
So Jack ended up buying a little cabin above the city of Upland on the way up to Mount Baldy. And Mount Baldy is a town, but it's, I wouldn't even call it a town. I'd call it an area, kind of.
I can barely take that seriously. Mount Baldy, B-A-L-D-Y, Baldy.
Yep. Baldy.
Like, okay.
Like Bald Eagle, Baldy. So Jack ended up buying a little cabin above the city of Upland on the way up to Mount Baldy. Now, Mount Baldy is, I wouldn't say really a town, more of like a little community. It did have a post office, and that's about it. There wasn't too much up there. There wasn't much to his cabin. It was very rustic, and he loved it. He loved the solitude it provided for him. Now, Jack was a saver by nature, and when I say this, he probably had the first dime he ever made or received. He was proud to save money, and, you know, that's just what he did. He lived very, very frugally. So it was
a lot of his generation did, I think.
Exactly. It was that very cabin where Marcia met Jack. Marcia tells the officer that Jack had listed the cabin for sale, and she had recently saw a flyer, so she called about it because she was interested in buying it. Marcia and her girlfriend, Judy Gellert, went to the cabin, and they immediately fell in love with it. Now, Jack told them, even though he loved his cabin dearly, he was getting up there in years, and he needed to be closer to town. Plus, the winters were freezing. That's the good thing about L.A. Like, you're down at the ground, but you're 2 hours from snow. Easily. Not even 2 hours. Probably much closer in many parts. So the winters were getting pretty tough on him, and he needed to get back down to town. So he'd already found a cute little bungalow down below in the town, and he said he was really excited about it, and he was ready, you know, to kind of start a new life down there. And Marcia would later state that when they went up to his cabin, there was no heat, and Jack had, like, no food. He had water, cereal. Now, he has money, mind you.
He just didn't
do that. She had said later that she felt so endeared about all that and his simple life that she actually made him a roast because she wanted him to have a good, decent meal. Now, all of this, by the way, was not because he had no money. Like I said, he was ever the saver.
Right.
In fact, he was able to purchase that house with cash. Cash. And still have lots and lots of savings left. So Marcia and Judy, they desperately wanted to buy that cabin, but they were short on funds. Now, Jack, being the nice guy that he was, decided to loan them the money for the mortgage. So he fronted them the money. So instead of like going through a bank and getting a mortgage, they would pay him almost like a rent to own, I guess, right? So when Jack moved off the mountain to Upland, they still were very, very close, often coming down there and seeing him and hanging out with them. Now, Matthews, of course, can see the worry in Marcia's face, and he tells her that he's going to do the best he can to find Jack. Matthews heads back to the station, and he puts together a missing poster, and he gets it out to all the police stations nearby, which I think is remarkable, from Los Angeles all the way up to Seattle. Mm-hmm. The train stops where the train would go. Now, trying to figure out how they could get him to, I guess, come out of hiding, if you will, if mm-hmm. he did take off, they put a stop on his disability checks and his Social Security checks, right? So they blocked them. With the idea being that if that's not deposited in his checking account on the date it's supposed to, he's going to, you know, call somebody or he's going to come out and try to call and figure out why. So when 30 days pass without a word from Jack, they are really starting to think that he may not just simply be missing. The thought turns to concern when another couple calls police and they decide that they need to go in and talk to Lieutenant Matthews. Tom and Sandy Bailey come to the station. Now, the Baileys had lived up at Mount Baldy for a long time. Sandy had worked at that tiny little post office, which is actually where she first met Jack. He had come in there and, you know, such a small little town, everybody knows everybody, and that's kind of how they started talking. So the couple informs Lieutenant Matthews that they've been old neighbors of Jack's up on Mount Baldy for over 20 years, and they had grown so close to him that they had adopted a son, and they made Jack their son's godfather. They would spend every holiday together. Jack would either come to the Bailey's house or they would swing by his house. So when Jack moved into town, they still stayed close. They would go down and see him, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, because Jack was getting up in years and he didn't really have any contact with his family, his blood family, he had listed Sandy on his bank accounts and all his financials just in case something would happen to him, right? He didn't want the money to go nowhere. He wanted it to go somewhere. But Sandy got a little weirded out, shall we say, when recently Jack had told her that he changed all of his accounts and put Marcia and Judy's name on everything.
Huh.
Now, Sandy said, you know, they'd always talk and things like that, Jack and Sandy. He would call her. And he called her, and Sandy said that she could tell that there was something going on there. Something was wrong, right? So much so, he called her and said, they're starting to move things in my house, the house in Upland, right? Because that cabin was pretty rustic. And Sandy's like, do you feel okay? And Jack stated that not only are they moving like furniture and clothes into my house, but they're starting to get rid of my stuff. And I feel pretty weird about it, right? So mm-hmm. Sandy knew something was a little bit off there. So much so, again, that when they couldn't find Jack, Sandy had taken it upon herself to make a missing poster of Jack, and she purposely hung it up in the post office. She wanted Marcia and Judy to see that poster, right?
Right.
She kind of suspected maybe.
She knows. She knows. She's onto him.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, she knows. She's no dummy.
So Sandy says then the two women came into the post office, and they were not very happy. Angrily, Marcia snapped at Sandy to quit calling the house, quit calling Jack, and they feel that they're being harassed and that the community is looking at them funny now. And she snagged that poster right off the wall. Now, that's exactly kind of what Sandy wanted to see, because that's telling, you know what I mean?
So it's kind of an admission that, you know, she might not be on the up and up. Yeah.
So a few weeks later, Marcia went to Sandy again and said, you need to stop all this. Jack's fine. He went to Seattle. And if you don't stop it, I'm going to sue you. And Sandy said, bring it on, Chicky Poo, bring it on, right?
Come at me, bro.
The Baileys tell police that they don't believe Jack would just up and go on a long trip without telling them and saying goodbye. Furthermore, the couple says they don't believe Jack could even handle that trip with his health. And that's what, do you know how long that is? That is a long way from Los Angeles to Seattle via train.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I wouldn't do it. That's for sure.
It's a long journey. Luckily for Lieutenant Matthews, the old neighbors are just getting started with what they would become an earful of strange things that have been going on. The couple tell police that things have been strange ever since Marcia and Judy entered Jack's life. They tell them that the sale of the cabin was so fast, and it happened basically overnight. Now, you know, Jack was fronting them the money, so I guess it's not like you have to wait for a house to close, but still a little weird, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sandy would also state that when she had called Jack one of the last times that she talked to him, that he seemed very hesitant on the phone, but then he did admit, you know, I'm kind of having second thoughts about this friendship of ours. Now, that was just weeks before Jack disappeared. Jack also told the Baileys that the women, Marcia and Judy, had stopped making payments to him on the cabin. But, you know, hey, I guess why would they when they moved into his house with him, right?
Right.
Over the course of the next few weeks, when the Baileys would call Jack, they could actually hear the fear in his voice. Mm. Something was not right. He told the Baileys that he felt trapped and he didn't know what to do.
That's sad.
Isn't it?
Makes me angry.
All this information now changes the case. So Matthews decides to take a closer look at Marcia and Judy to see, you know, what can I find out about them? Here we go. He learns that the pair had met in rehab in San Diego and that they'd been a couple for almost 15 years. Marcia was just 25 years old at the time that they met. She had started to receive therapy while in drug rehab, and her counselor was none other than 35-year-old Judy.
Oh. Now,
Judy was a former drug addict who ended up losing everything, basically, including her husband, while being a drug addict. And one day she just shaped up, got her life together, and began this counseling job, which is where she met Marcia, the love of her life. The pair immediately had chemistry. Now, what they didn't have, Jen, was a lot of money, but they did have a taste for the finer things, don't we?
Yeah. Yep, champagne dreams on a beer budget.
That's right. They would spend more money than they brought in. Marcia had trouble getting and keeping a job, and this led to lots of fights. And well, after 10 years together, they were well over $100,000 in debt, and they had no other choice but to file for bankruptcy, which they did. With the fresh, clean slate and now owing no bills, the pair started over. Marcia took a job at the Mount Baldy Park. It's a little area there.
I know.
Took a job at the Mount Baldy Park. And one of the benefits of this job, and it said she was a hostess, and I'm thinking that's sort of like a guard. It's not really a, it's not a park rec guy, but like a, you know what I'm saying, right?
Like you come in and she's like, hi, here's some information.
Yes, that's what I think. Versus a park ranger. There we go. One of the benefits of this job is that they get to live on site in an RV free of charge. Bada bing, bada boom. This should be great, right? So they should be, you know, because Judy has that counseling job. Now Marcia has a job and they are living rent free. So they're going to save some money to buy their dream home.
Well, good.
5 years into living in that RV, they still had no savings. Nothing.
Of course not.
Zip,
are you kidding me?
Yeah. Zilch. Frustrated, but not out of the game yet, they ran across Jack's cabin for sale. It was small but affordable. They called him about it, and that is where they met Jack Irwin.
Poor Jack had lame duck written all over him, didn't he?
Right? He really did. Poor guy. So learning that and kind of getting, you know, more than suspicious, I should say, police dig in and they want to take a look into Jack's finances. They want to see, you know, what he had and make sure it's still there.
Intact? Betcha it's
so
not.
It seemed Jack had quite a little nest egg, but that wasn't all. It seems like, Jen, shockingly, weeks before he disappeared, Jack had signed over power of attorney to Marcia and Judy.
Oh, poor Jack.
With the fine print being that everything that Marcia and Judy did while Jack was alive was supposed to benefit Jack. Now, supposed to was the key phrase. You see, Jen, as soon as they got control of that, the spending spree began.
They siphoned him dry. Poor guy.
They bought an RV. They bought a Corvette. They bought a Jeep. They even took out a mortgage on that house, the Upland house that was paid for in cash. So they took out a mortgage on a house that was already free and clear, right? Took out a mortgage of $125,000 on Jack's house.
Oh, Jack. Poor Jack. What scum. I mean, they're total pieces of shit.
Learning all this, Matthews decides he needs to go and confront Marcia and see what she has to say about this wicked spending she's been doing. He asks her about the mortgage on the house. You know, why would you take a mortgage on a house that, first of all, you don't even own, but secondly, is paid off? You don't do that, right? Well, Marcia, she's got an excuse for everything, Jen. See, her and Jack, they're going into business together. They're going to start a computer company.
Oh,
right?
Well, that's up Jack's alley, right?
Thank you, right?
Yeah, I mean, he knows everything about computers. Yeah.
Never had a job?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Prodigy. Marshall. That's all I'm going to say. He was prodigy.
Right. What about the cars? The Jeep and the Corvette? Marcia said she bought those for Jack so he could get around, which obviously, Jen, these are the perfect cars for an injured veteran of 71 years.
Oh, yeah. That's
getting up into the Jeep and getting down into the Corvette. Yeah.
No, it was made for them, disabled veterans. They really are. Jesus. Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Matthews is not buying it. Shocker, I know. And asks Marcia to come to the station for a polygraph test. Well, she's angry. She's like, what are you suggesting, right? She agrees, angrily. But Jen, wouldn't you know it? Sometime overnight, she called and left a message on his answering machine at the station because, you know what? She had a work conflict. She couldn't come in. She couldn't come in today after all. So Matthews is like, oh, okay, great. So he repeatedly tried to get in touch with her over and over and over. And then he was soon contacted by a lawyer who put a stop to any and all questions.
Oh, good.
So even though there's no smoking gun, it is looking more and more like Marcia and Judy may have helped, that's in quotes, Jack disappear. Right?
May have helped, you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A hunch, unfortunately, Jen, as we know, is not enough to arrest them. Months go by and no one is talking. Months turn into a year and the case is turned over to the San Bernardino District Attorney's Office. Now,
that's so frustrating. So frustrating because they're right there. They just need that.
Well, this is why I like Sandy Bailey. She's my new favorite person. So the DA, and we're going to meet him in a minute. His name is Maury Weiss. But he said, honestly, I think that they gave the case over to the DA's office because they were so sick and tired of listening to this lady named Sandy Bailey who kept calling and calling and calling, and they got tired of dealing with her.
Right? Squeaky wheel, man. It's always squeaky wheel.
I love her. So at this point, it is now June 2001, and District Attorney Investigator Maury Weiss, now he's a retired policeman, but he was like, this is what I did, this is what I do, I can never retire. So once he left the actual force, he went and became an investigator, and he loves the hunt. He loves that part of it. So when he came across a file on his desk entitled The Disappearance of Jack Irwin, he was like, this is a puzzle. I'm on it. I like this stuff. So Weiss immediately sees how fast Jack's money was being depleted. Now, quickly isn't even the right word here, Jen. You ready?
Probably almost immediately, maybe.
Jack's account started with about $230,000 in it when Jack went missing in September 1999. And by January of 2000, that's right, Jen, 4 months, he had a whopping $14 in his account.
I can spend money that quickly, too, but it would be my own money. That is amazing.
Well, I thought I misread that. I was like, does that say January 2020? Because I was like, wait, that was not even a half a year they spent that much. That's
Lord.
Insane. So just 2 years shy of missing, Marcia and Judy sold his Upland home for around $190,000, right? So they just took it upon themselves to sell it. He's not come back, anything like that. They go and they buy a really nice home outside of San Diego. Then, Jen, the cabin was burglarized, and this was the early part of the summer. And so they reported it to the insurance company, and they got a small payout. That cabin that was very rustic. That's not it, Jen. Then in August, a raging fire. Not the wildfire variety, mind you.
Right.
Hit the cabin, and it was gone, too. When firefighters got to the cabin, all the doors and windows were locked, which is not so unusual. I mean, I think that's okay. But what was unusual is that the water had been turned off just recently. There was no water to firefighters in putting out the fire. And, like, it's pretty rustic up there. It's sort of, you know, it's like the woods around here, but more, you know, less
hair.
Yeah. This was in August of 2000. Maury Weiss knew he needed to get some firsthand information, and he drives up to Mount Baldy to talk to neighbors and see if they know anything about the night the cabin burned. He soon finds a neighbor who tells him that morning she had had a friend over to have coffee, which they did each and every day around 9:30 a.m. That's why she knew the time I mean, that's why she knew the exact details, because her friend would always come over at 9:30. She said that they were out in the back on the deck enjoying coffee when all of a sudden they notice a ton of flames and smoke coming out of where Jack's cabin was. So they call 911. Firefighters arrive and they try their best to put out the fire, but it's too late. It's total loss. Now, the neighbor also mentioned just another little tidbit. She told Weiss that, you know, I believe those two girls set this on fire. And Weiss is like, well, why would you say that? And she said, right after the fire started, she saw a Corvette racing down the mountain. And up here, no one owns a car like that. In fact, the only person I know that owns a car like that is Marsha Johnson. Okay.
How are the roads up a mountain?
They're twisty and turny, but it depends. You're probably not going to have a Corvette up there. Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm thinking there are not a lot of paved roads. And I'm sure, I'm thinking Jack's cabin didn't have a paved driveway.
No, it's rustic. Like,
that's what I mean. I mean,
he had a bed, a TV, a table, one plate, one fork, one spoon, one knife.
Right. And a Corvette in the driveway.
And a Corvette in the driveway, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's so Jack.
That's so Jack. When Weiss contacts the insurance company, he is told that the cabin's payout was almost $170,000. Mm-hmm. That had to be with land, because let me tell you, I saw the cabin and no. And I know California's expensive, but still.
Not that expensive.
And even though the insurance company believed, I mean, he pretty much said, I guarantee this is arson. They hired one of their best fire investigators to go and check it out, and he couldn't find anything. He did remark that it smelled funny, but unlike anything they've ever smelled, which I think is interesting. So I'd like to know how that happened, but whatever. We'll never know is my point.
No.
At this point, Marsha and Judy have their grubby little mitts on over $500,000. The cars, the sold houses, their new San Diego home, and their RV. And well, Jen, you know, money doesn't last like it used to, especially when you're spending it all the time. So what's their next plan? They're running out of money, right?
Of course they are. That's hence why the place got burned down.
And the other one sold, among other things.
And that's money's going to be gone quickly also.
So what's their next plan? Well, it doesn't take too long for Weiss to hear it. The insurance agent that he was talking to told Weiss that, you know, Marsha Johnson just couldn't quit talking about some lawsuit she had just filed against her psychiatrist for malpractice. Yikes! Say what? Now, remember, Jen, Marsha met Judy while under her care for therapy, and it seems like Marsha tends to like her therapist, and she likes them a lot, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
So Weiss obtained documents about the lawsuit, and it seems like she did file it, and it was settled, and Marsha received $30,000.
Wow.
So what happened, Jen? I'm going to tell you. In October 1999, Marsha was severely depressed. Judy was like, I can't handle this. You have to go back. You need some help. You need some treatment. So just like before, Marsha sought therapy and met with a doctor, Dr. Deborah Martin. And well, you know, it's kind of her MO. She falls for Dr. Martin and Dr. Martin falls for Marsha. And since Marsha loves to spend money, she bought her new girlfriend fancy, expensive gifts. And Jen, you know, gifts have receipts, and
they
the partner she's cheating on with has eyes. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I do. But you want to tell everybody else?
I am. Needless to say, this did not turn out very well. Judy was furious. She saw that, you know, they had just gotten some money from Jack's house sale and cabin, shall we say, cabin's demise. They're running out of money. So she was mad at Marsha, saying, why are you spending the last of what we have on this girl? Like, what are you doing? And she said, you know what? You're going to have to make this right. You're going to have to make her pay for these gifts and the betrayal. So Judy talked Marsha into suing her counselor, Dr. Martin, for engaging in inappropriate conduct with a client.
Nice.
Right? Mm-hmm. Marsha, shockingly, agreed.
Really shocking?
No, not really.
Yeah, I mean,
because they're
Losers. Yeah, they're horrible scum of the earth people.
Here's where we get a little insight. you know, I'm thinking Marcia and Judy didn't really think out this whole suing thing out very well because, you know, during therapy sessions, you tell your therapist things. And normally that would be protected under the, you know, patient-doctor privilege.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're being sued, I'm guessing you might just toss out a few things, right?
See where right. See what I would think that confidentiality might go out the door.
I think you wouldn't care. So during the deposition, the doctor admitted that they did have sex, but this was only after she was no longer her client. They weren't seeing each other as a patient-doctor anymore, right? They said, okay, so she did agree to that, hence why the $30,000, I'm sure, was paid. Now, she did go on to say that she believed Marcia to be delusional. You think? So the attorneys asked, why do you believe that? And the doctor said, well, you know, Marcia would always make up these outlandish tales, these lies. You know, she told me that she had killed her brother and her sister when she was a young child. So the attorney's like, well, did you believe that? And the doctor's like, you know, I mean, I didn't really know her because, you know, she was my client. So I looked into it and no, they're both alive and well. So that was a big lie. And they're like, okay, you know, did she mention anything else? Yeah, she also said she'd killed an old man who lived up on Mount Dr. Martin said that Marcia told her that she'd shot him and chopped him up.
Oh, bam. Poor Jack.
There it is. Boop, there it is.
Let's get the dirty little liar.
So Weiss, of course, is beyond excited. And with this information, he was able to get a warrant for the cabin, as well as put together a forensic team to go up there and see if they can find anything, locate anything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The team did find some blood, but due to the elements up there, it snows, it rains, all that stuff, they couldn't really determine if it was Jack's blood or really even if it was a human blood. But it did give them enough probable cause to start building a case. The other thing is, there's still no body.
It's because she trapped him up.
So it's been almost 3 years at this point, and they needed to get them. So they come together and they're thinking, think, how can we get them? They decide wiretaps are the way to go. I love this so much.
We haven't had a good wiretap story in a while.
This is a good one, too. So they received permission to put wiretaps on Marcia and Judy's home phone, as well as their cell phones. Now, they also tapped Dr. Martin's phone. They were hoping that this would all come together somehow. Now, wiretaps are only good for a certain amount of time, so they needed to get the women talking, and they needed to get them talking about that crime that happened 3 years ago. Well, that's not normally going to come up in a conversation on the phone, you know, because it doesn't.
No.
Unless you're prodded a little bit, unless somebody kind of gives you some reasons to talk about it. Now, this is what I love. This is what I love what they did here. First up, they send a woman to the house. Ding dong. Marcia answers the door.
Hello.
Exactly. And says,
thank
hi,
you for
I'm
coming
here.
To our play. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
I'm here to tell you that burnt down cabin is your responsibility. It is a danger to the community, and the city is demanding it be cleaned up. Here you go. You have 14 days to do it.
Huh.
So they just kind of sit on that for a minute. So that's, you know, kind of get the women talking about that possibly on the phone, talking about that cabin, talking about getting it cleaned up, anything, right? So they just wait a few days. And then Weiss, they don't know him, mind you, personally drives out to their house to issue a warrant to Marcia to appear in court on charges of elder abuse and theft charges. Now, these aren't real. This isn't real. It's to get them talking. Right.
Right. Yeah. Police can lie and or say whatever needs to be said to get a confession. Mm-hmm. Correct? Right? Am I wrong about that?
No, I think it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm right.
You're right.
I don't know.
I can't play the Mr. Big.
I'm not very logical about things like this. No.
You're too emotional.
I'm too emotional.
All right. And finally, the creme de la creme. The police show up at the prison where Judy is working, right, as a counselor, and they seize her Ford Expedition. And they claim that they believe that the vehicle was used during the abduction or murder of Jack Irwin. Well, I don't know about you, but if I saw the homicide police outside taking my car, I'd be freaking out, right?
Just a bit, yeah. That's if I exactly saw anybody what, out taking my car, I'd freak out. But yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what happens. When Judy comes outside and her car is gone, She's furious. She is freaked out. She calls Marcia, and the talk is being recorded. Here we go. You can't make this up, I tell you.
I love
Judy,
it.
Judy calls Marcia, and here we go. They just confiscated my expedition. What? Johnson shouts, right? Judy tells Marcia that the police were there, or are there, and they took her car, and she says, and this is Judy, right? So we need to talk big time, big fucking time. Marcia then tells Judy, relax, relax. You cannot be charged with anything by association, Judy. Just because you knew me and I did things does not mean you're going to go and get in trouble for that. Get in any kind of trouble.
Isn't there something called guilty by association?
Well, I think if you're talking about it, and not to mention, I think, and I'm not sure, but Judy was spending all that money too.
Mm-hmm.
In another police maneuver, police decide to arrest Judy, not Marcia. They kind of want to put the pressure on Marcia, being that she just basically admitted she did something wrong. They wanted to put the pressure on her, right? This would not only allow them more time to gather some evidence, but they wanted to kind of see how this would play out between Judy and Marcia, right? Marcia, Jen, you gotta love Marcia. She did not disappoint. She got on that phone and she's calling everyone and anyone she could. She's panicking because they have the love of her life, Judy, in custody. In one call to her aunt, she actually admitted killing Jack and that the police already knew and the gig was up.
Yay, I'm so happy.
So Marcia, police are kind of, you know, they're watching her, seeing what she's doing, and they're starting to panic that she might make a run for the border, Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not Taco Bell, Mexico. So they know that they have to hurry up and move in. So on October 11th, 2002, a little more than 3 years after Jack Irwin's disappearance, police arrest Marcia Johnson for the murder of Jack Irwin. During the ride from her San Diego home to San Bernardino, Marcia was adamant that Judy was not involved in anything and did not want her to get in trouble for any of this. It was all her. It was all Marcia, basically.
Marcia, Marcia, Marcia.
That's what I kept saying when I was writing this. At the police station, Marcia talked. And boy, did she talk. Gets a little graphic here. Just gonna warn you. Marcia admitted she shot Jack Irwin and then dismembered him with a chainsaw.
Oh.
She even commented how heavy his head was when she cut it off. She didn't realize how heavy heads were. She told police she would take them to where she disposed of Jack's body, but shortly after saying all that, she changed her mind. She did not want to take them to where Jack would, I guess, be thrown out there in nothingness. So this next part I got from newspaper article in Mel, like M-E-L, magazine, and it is written by Cole Cadzen, and this gives you some pretty good insight about this case, and we'll put it on here, but I condensed and changed some stuff in here. So according to this article, Marcia stated it all started when Jack poisoned her three dogs, and that threw her over the edge.
What?
She said that even though Jack could be a nice guy, he was also feisty, and this is her quote. Jack was an asshole. He was a feisty little shit. I loved him. But then I got to know who he really was. He was constantly trying to create problems between me and Judy. He didn't like Judy that much, but he really wanted me. He bitched about Judy. Bitch, bitch, bitch. I used to tell him, that's my wife, but he continued to do it.
So it was okay that she killed him then? Is that what she's trying to say?
Well, it's all started with the poison, Jen, but hold, please. Marcia explained that one day she came home from work and noticed white powder around her dog's food bowls. And when she asked Jack what it was, Jack told her it was ant poison. She added, you ready? Mm-hmm. Dogs didn't eat it. They didn't get sick. They're fine. But she told Jack right then and there, I'm going to kill you. So she claims that after that dog poisoning that didn't poison her dog incident, she and Judy moved back to the cabin. Now, mind you, they moved back to the cabin from the Upland house that they moved in with Jack. He didn't invite them, but they moved themselves in there, including their clothes, their furniture, and they moved his stuff to the side, right? It was a short time later, Jack was going to come up to the cabin to help Marcia with some construction work. Marcia went to pick him up, and once she got there, she said, hey, can I use your bathroom? While she was in that part of the house, she stole his gun and she had planned to kill him on a desolate road on the way up to the cabin. But after seeing what she thought, I guess, was a little bit too much traffic, she changed her mind and decided she'd just go ahead and kill him at the cabin instead. Once at the cabin, Marcia claimed that Jack called her a nasty woman. Oh. And he started talking badly about Judy, and that's all it took. She took the gun and she shot him right then and there. She looked around and saw a chainsaw, and it was at this point she decided, I'm going to chop him up. She said she got a Rubbermaid container to hold the parts, cut his head off first, then his hands, then his feet, and she put parts in bags and then loaded it into the Rubbermaid container. She then added, this is her quote, after I first shot him and after I chopped him up, I sat on a step of wood, smoked a cigarette, and thought, that was really easy. It's easy to kill someone. People don't realize it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What a psychopath.
You're going to like this next part. She then put the Rubbermaid container in the back of the Expedition. So police were right, guessing that. Put it in the back of the Expedition and drove up to Glendora Ridge Road. She pulled over and tossed his head down the hill. She drove a few more miles, pulled over, and tossed his torso down the hill. And this, it's pretty rugged up there. It's pretty rugged and hilly, a little deserty, like dusty, right? And pretty steep at points. After doing all this, she panicked. She remembered his wallet was in his pocket. So she needed to go back down there, crawl down the hill to retrieve his wallet. Once she had his wallet, she pocketed the $20 he had in it.
Of course she did.
And tore up the paperwork in the wallet and then tossed it in the trash.
She should have been tossed in the trash.
Here's the question that you go, what?
been asking myself that the entire time.
Thank you. So with Jack's hands and feet still in bags in the Rubbermaid container back there, she decided she needed to venture into town and get some new tires.
Oh, of course she does.
So with the new tires, Jen, she even got a free car wash because, you know, she got new tires and they threw the free car wash in. And she said she got a little weirded out when they started crawling in the back because she told them not to crawl in the back. You know, because there's the Rubbermaid container back there.
She's got some hands back there.
Sure does. When she was finished at the auto shop with her new tires and freshly clean Expedition, she drove out to a nearby remote area, and with his shoes still on his feet, she tossed them out. Drove a little bit further and then tossed his hands out. She then tossed the empty container and went back to the cabin to get rid of the gun. Now, the gun, she would end up tossing over the mountain, and then she had to disassemble the chainsaw and throw that out as well.
She is a busy woman.
Marcia Johnson was convicted of murder, arson, among 26 other counts. Marcia received life in prison without the possibility of parole. Judy Gellert pled guilty to one felony charge of receiving stolen property and was sentenced to 180 days in jail to be served on weekends.
Aw, she's giving up her weekends.
Marcia said she had no regrets and would do all of this again if somebody messed with her animals. She does mention that if she had a regret, it would probably be that she touched Jack's money so soon after killing him. She believes, you know, if she had not dipped into that money so fast, she would have never been caught. Today, Marcia is serving her sentence, ironically, at the same facility where Judy worked as a counselor. Now, Judy is still out there, and I know where, but I'm not going to say because I'm a nice person, but she's living in the Midwest.
Wow.
So, here's my point. They were together forever and ever, right? And you don't all of a sudden, Marcia, who can't even hold a job, comes into all this money and you're not going to be like, hey, where's Jack, right? So do not. You know, Judy, and that's all she got, really. Also, this video that I watched of Marcia. Delusional is, whatever. She is like barking, but she's like telling the cops she was just so mad at Jack for making her kill him and chop him up and how hard that was.
Yeah, she's got some severe mental health issues. I hope she's getting treatment while she's...
if she did, she's probably having an affair with the counselor. Anyway, she does have a little anger, of course, towards Judy because she said that Judy should be in there with her. And that she saved Judy.
Well, I'm not saying she's wrong. Judy should have gotten more than weekends only.
Thank you. That's not even a year, is it? No, maybe. I don't know. I don't do math.
There's 52 weeks in a year. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. It's 2 years, I guess, or three or whatever it is. Whatever.
Of weekends. I mean, that's nothing.
And she's
like, having your kids in sports. That's what you do.
Right.
You know, every weekend you go to sports things. Uh-huh. Some people call that prison. Others don't.
That's right. So that is the case of poor Jack.
Poor Jack.
You know, look at that little Sandy Bailey said that, you know, he was a nice guy. He was not social, I think, because you couldn't hardly understand him. You really had to focus on what he said because of his speech impediment, because of the damage to his vocal cords. He kind of limped. He was an older guy. You know, he never married. And so, I mean, all that leans into you probably not being the most social person, right?
Well, even if he did try to kill her animals, did he deserve all of that, though? But seriously.
He did do that, because you know why? That's what I said. That was my whole point. I was trying to get there. If this person killed a dog, or would have killed
tried
the dog,
to.
Are you really going to get in the car with him and go somewhere and say, hey, come help me up at the house? That is a big, fat lie, and you know it. We all know it. The only one that doesn't know it is Marcia.
Or she refuses to believe that. Yeah. That's unbelievable. Crazy story.
It takes
quite a ride.
People.
It does.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good one. Very interesting. Thank you.
Poor Jack.
Seriously.
I also wonder, like, what happened? Like, how come he didn't stay in contact with his family? That bothers me. Right? And Sandy Bailey, you little angel. Thank God she stayed on them. So otherwise, they would have gotten away with it. They really would have.
Well, he might not have had family.
No, it said that he just didn't have much after the war. He didn't have much to do with them. And PTSD. Or whatever, you know, who knows what he was going through?
Well, maybe
people change.
But if he's not really talking and nobody really knows him, a lot could have been they refused to speak with him too.
Right.
Or he doesn't have, like, with his folks gone and he didn't have siblings, you wouldn't hang out with your mom. I don't know.
I don't know either. Jen, we're being too emotional.
And
but anyway,
not
that's
logic.
The story of Jack. And yeah, it's you have to go read that article.
Send it to me or post
Mel
it.
Magazine. It's not that long, but that's the part where. So I guess this reporter, you know, bugged her and wanted to get in a thing with her, and she's like, "Okay."
I'm sure she was easy pickings. She wanted to talk.
Well, she said, "I don't want to." Oh, this was the other part I love. She did not want to just talk about the crime. In fact, she wanted to know if he could help her write her memoir, or better yet, write it for her. Now, as you know, which I didn't quite know this, that California does not have the Son of Sam law, so they could profit, apparently, or at that time they could. He was like, yeah, that's not going to happen. So anyway.
Wow. Yep. Interesting. Nice case.
That's all I got.
Oh. Are you doing any, are you, you've been watching anything interesting on TV?
The Vow on HBO, which is about that cult.
Yes.
The NXIVM cult. Let's see what else.
Crazy. Talk about crazy.
Thank you.
Some people were outside of that cult, the NXIVM cult, were outside dancing at the prison where the leader is being held.
He's insane.
I mean, this was recently, like within the past couple weeks.
They branded these women with initials.
I know.
And Allison Mack. Are you cray cray? But that's what he did. He's whatever. Wallander, the new Wallander, which is was in Wallander from a long time ago. This is the new guy, and he's pretty cute, ladies. Check it out. That is on Amazon Prime.
I have the VPN, which you had suggested, and I watched my buddy David Tennant in his...
It's not your buddy, it's your future husband.
I know, it's my second husband. In the movie Dez, which is a three-part series about the serial killer Dennis Nilsen. I enjoyed it. He's a really creepy guy, and David Tennant totally drove it home how creepy. And
I need to watch that.
It's good. It's on channel4.com if you have a VPN. Mm-hmm. It's British. I also watched him in another show called Deadwater Fell. It's a four-part series, and it's kind of a did he or did he not do it type thing. So good. So very good.
What I watched this morning, and I can't wait to go back in there and do it right now, it is a series on Netflix called Wrong Man, and a little team of lawyers, investigators, defense attorneys are taking a look at some crimes that they believe the people are doing time for and somehow should not be. And the producer director of the series is Berlinger, who is the guy that did the West Memphis 3 documentaries.
Those are good documentaries. See, stuff like that makes me so angry.
Well, and you're going to get a little angry.
I know. And I'm so angry with everything now that I don't know if I should add that on top of the shit cake we've been eating.
It's pretty interesting. So check it out. Wrong Man.
Also, what I can't wait to watch after we run to Costco and IKEA today is Ratched on Netflix.
That's on my list too. But my mom said, you're going to... Oh, my mom's name's Billy. God love Billy. So Billy sends me a thing and says, well, I slept in today because I stayed up late watching movies last night. And I said, oh, yeah, anything good? And she's like, here, I got to read this to you because it's a crack up. Red Dragon, The Devil Within, and Nurse Archery, a series. And then again, Nurse Archery. And then again, Rashid. And then again, Rasharf. And that's R-A-C-H-A-R-F. And then I said, I know what you mean. Ha, ha, ha. And she goes, my phone is smarter than me.
Oh, that's funny.
So I only knew what she was talking about because I saw the promos for it.
That's funny. I've only seen the promos. I don't know if it has anything to do with the Nurse Ratched.
Is it based on it?
Well, yes. I'm excited for the
set designs.
Oh, okay.
And you know who plays her partner in it, her love interest partner, whatever, because back then, Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City.
Well, I'm excited for the costume design, not only the story, but the costume design, the set design, that 1950s, 60s era is like totally up my alley. I love all that mid-century stuff. Yep. So I can't wait to go watch that. I know. And the Marvelous Miss Maisel. Did you ever watch that?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Love it.
Tell people that you sold a piece of.
I did. I used to sell on eBay. I need to get back to selling on eBay. But I did actually sell a prop to the set of Miss Maisel. It was one of the brushes.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was a brush.
Hairbrush.
No, not a hairbrush, right? But it was the brush that you would brush the hair off after you go to the barber. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I never saw it. I made sure I watched every bit of it, but I never saw it. But I did sell.
It was probably there.
Yeah.
It was probably there. Just didn't see it.
Yeah. I sold it. That was my only claim to fame so far.
So far in life, Jen. It's not looking so good. You're getting up there. Just kidding.
I know.
All right, Jenny, that's all I got. Miss everybody out there in La La Land, and I wish life was back to normal, but alas, it is not.
But you know what? It's October, and it's our favorite month, so let's grab hold of it. And if you guys have any requests on maybe what we could do for Halloween fun this year, send it in. Let's try to get spooky, but doesn't have to be paranormal spooky, just something fun spooky, something. Give us ideas.
I'm going to go make a Halloween wreath for my front door from all my bargains that I got at the dollar store. I'm going to go do that right after this, and I'm going to continue to watch that episode of Wrong Man and see what happens to that poor boy that did a false confession, and now he's still paying for it 25 years later.
Ooh, maybe you could write about that for an episode.
Yeah, it's kind of you've probably heard of it. I would think most people
have. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right, buddy. That's it. That's all I got. So until next time. Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com.
If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
I can barely take that seriously. Mount Baldy, B-A-L-D-Y, Baldy.
Yep. Baldy. Like, okay. Like bald eagle, Baldy.
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 See eagle. That man over there? No, not him, the Baldy. Yeah, that's what I think.
So we bought a cabin up there at Mount Baldy. Now I can never say that without laughing, Jen. Thank you. Thank you for
I'm
that.
I'm sorry. And I'm sorry for interrupting. That was another thing besides our low energy. I am interrupting too much. And what else? I'm inappropriate. And what was the other word that our little friend used?
I can't remember.
I'm inappropriate and I don't know. Doesn't so matter. I will. You.
Who's the one with the podcast? Not her. Hi.
Okay, all I'm saying is whatever.
Exactly. Exactly.
She's not going to be the first one. She's not the first one that doesn't like me, and she's sure as hell not going to be the last. I'll make sure that doesn't happen. So, all right, let's go.
So Jack ended up buying a little cabin above the city of Upland.
But what I'm going to, let me interrupt you right now. No, I'm kidding.
I was just going to say, are you freaking kidding me?
That was my Kanye West impersonation.
You don't deserve it. Yeah. You don't deserve the award.
Let me tell you, I'm going to tell you about Beyonce. Yeah. Oh,
poor Kanye. All right.
I'm sorry. You can cut all that out, Nico, or put that in the middle, whatever.
Put that in the bin. Put it at the beginning. Just get rid of listeners right off, right from the start.
We don't need them.
Why bother? Why bother even listening? All right.